Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021. Today, financial institutions. I will go through a few more markets with you, and of course I always start with the screen, so there's more market stuff for us to talk about. Anyway, God, it irritates me. But the screens for today, there we go. And we'll just work it up the line, the meat grinder a little bit here. Ma'am, is this a good day or a bad day on the street? Were the bulls in charge or the bears?
Bulls.
Bulls, okay. Remember, bulls, not bulls. Bulls, okay. Yeah. Was it an awesome day, sir, or was it a meh day? Yeah, I mean, this is nothing spectacular. I mean, this is actually so low that you really don't see any pattern in the upstrokes. Normally you'd see Dow 500, NASDAQ in that order rising or falling. And in this one, it's just sort of like everyone was, it's kind of one of those days you wake up. Okay, for me, I wake up and I check the obituaries. If I'm not there, it's a good day. And then I realize I've got to come in and teach your sorry butt, and then it's a bad day. No, yeah, it's just sort of like there was kind of a little bit of positivity to it. But you notice that the surge came in the morning. Do you see how there was more of a lift there at the beginning? And then it sort of lost its steam and just sort of floated the rest of the day. So this is one of those things where, yeah, I mean, we celebrate a good up day. But at the same time, there wasn't anything here that really catches my attention as a game changer. And again, notice that we have news that can always be used as an excuse for whether a market goes up or down. And if the market goes up and there's good news out there, then we say, well, that good news was what caused it, or vice versa, or conversely. The thing, though, is that oftentimes these markets are moved by things that are not really big newsworthy items to the average person. And it's a subtlety that can cause something to happen in the markets and cause a surge upward or a surge downward. And a day like this, this was just a day that wasn't very thrilling, but it wasn't a bad day either. Despite the fact that the world is going to hell. We're all going to die from Rona. Afghanistan is a mess. China is about to go to war on Taiwan. But, you know, for us, it's just one of those days that's not really anything we need to be unhappy about. So, yeah, if the markets were going down, you'd have everyone saying all these things I just said. These are the reasons it's going down. But because it's going up, we don't even mention those reasons that it should be going down. I'm trying to be a little confusing here because that's just the way it is. Don't always believe what the talking heads say about this kind of why a market does what it does. I want to show you a few things here, but before that, of course, now notice that the Russell 2000 did have a fairly decent day upward, and that is oftentimes a result of the fact that the Russell is sort of an amalgamation of companies of different kinds. And also, the Russell is not a weighted index. So a small company will push as much on it as a big company in that 2000. And that might be why it went up. It just also might be simply the fact that the Russell had a couple of companies in it that had a surge day. They really went up. And in an unweighted index, a couple of companies, even if they're small, that have a big, hard boom day can cause that whole index to jump, despite the fact that the broader markets are not jumping at all. Let me come over here. Oil is fighting. It's crude is up a little bit today. So, I mean, that's more than a percent. So crude wants to find that $75 a barrel neckline again. It wants to find that. And as this semester goes along, I'll be telling you a few different places where we have a sense of where markets participants want it to be. And we'll see if it gets to those places, those targets. Over a long haul, I'm actually very good at telling you where things will eventually get. But in the short run, it can be way against my desires and my expectations. Gold is down. It's nothing spectacular. And that oftentimes, notice it interestingly enough, that bond yields actually went up. That would mean that bond prices went down. Again, yield and price are inversely related. So if I see these yields going up, that means that the prices of bonds went down. The prices of bonds would have gone down because investors were selling them. Let me walk you through that again. This is that chain of logic. And when I used to teach, for many years, I taught economics. And I always avoided doing graphs because graphs are not an explanation. They're just an illustration. And so I get you guys to my class, and sometimes takes a while to get used to this thinking process. Okay. The bond yields, which are measured here, went up. Again, you see right here, the bond yields went up. They went up by what? About 4.7 basis points. By the way, a basis point is 1/100 of a percent. A basis point is 1/100 of a percent. So I see that bond prices went up by almost bond yields went up by almost 5 basis points. Okay, that means that bond prices must have gone the other way. It's a mathematical relationship. There's no opinion about it. It's just math. So the bond prices went down. Bond prices would have gone down because of bondholders selling, driving the prices down. Bondholders selling. So there were investors were exiting, leaving the bond market. Okay? You okay on that? Now let's look over here. We also see that investors were getting out of gold. They were leaving the gold, they were leaving the bonds, and they were buying stocks. Look at it again. Okay. Investors were getting out of gold. They were getting out of bonds, and they were buying stocks. How do I know they were buying stocks? Because the stock indices went up. So this is a reverse flight to quality. In other words, investors were getting out of the safer stuff and going to the riskier stuff. They were getting out of the safety of gold, they were getting out of the safety of bonds, and they were going into the risky, the equities, the stocks. And by the way, if you want to sound sophisticated, you don't say stocks, you say equities. Makes you sound real badass. Trust me on that. Yes, go.
Didn't you say that if the basis points increases, that means you're selling?
Well, you could jump the step, and that's basically what I'm saying is. See, the basis, it went up 5 basis points. In other words, the yield went up 5 basis points. Wait. Yeah, gold was being sold. That's not a bond. We're talking about bonds which have yields. And that's measuring a yield on a bond. That is just, I see what you're asking. The gold is just pure gold. There people are selling gold. See, that subtlety of bond yield and price is only with bonds. Yeah, I gotcha. Let me clarify what he was asking. First, I'm bitching about this thing, the green on the bond. And I said, well, that means they're selling them. And then I see the red on the gold, and that means they're selling those. I gotcha. The green on the bonds is the opposite of what the bond's prices are doing. The green is their yields going up, which means that their prices are going down. So if they measured bonds, the way they used to show bond prices, that would have shown a red. But because they show the yield, that's the opposite, a green. God, I'm getting my own self confused now. Yeah, okay, we're good, yes. So in other words, green on the bonds means yields are going up, prices are going down. Red on the gold means that their prices are going down. Prices going down means there's selling pressure. So investors are getting out of gold, they're getting out of bonds, and, well, spank me, Buddha, the equities are going up. So that means that investors are moving toward the risky stuff. That means that there is an optimism. That means that the bulls are in charge. Now, the bulls weren't doing much today. You know, this wasn't like a stampede of bulls running to the Outback Steakhouse. But at the same time, it clearly shows that the investor sentiment was positive today, because they were getting out of things that you would go into gold, you would go into bonds if you're worried about the economy. You get out of them and you go to stocks when you are bullish on our economy. You buy stocks if you believe that the economy is going to go up. In fact, that's something that I'll show you later in the course. Portfolio rebalancing. When your judgment informs you that the economy is going toward a recession, you normally will just start to begin to move some of your money out of your stock holdings and move it toward a bond portfolio, and sometimes even into a commodities portfolio. And I'm going to talk about that today. There are ways that you can get into stocks and bonds and gold and platinum and anything you want without being filthy rich. See, back in the old days, many years ago, you had to have serious money to take positions that were responsible, that were good. You know, you might have someone have $100, but that was enough to buy a couple of stocks. These days, you can have $100 and you can buy a portfolio that is very mature, very well balanced. And it could be a portfolio of stocks, it could be a portfolio of bonds, it could be a portfolio that's a mixture. You can buy things that are like commodities and real estate. Ah, yeah, something is itchy. Oh. I used beard cream today and it's still itching like fire. Anyway, hate masks, but, you know, I don't want to die. So there's that. Okay, now, enough of that. Now, also interestingly enough, though, you don't want to go crazy with these kinds of analyses. Well, this went up, that went down. In a case like crude oil, commodities like crude, they do something. They have a meaning behind them. Crude powers the world. And as much as we might not like it, especially if you have deep concerns about climate change, we're going to have internal combustion engines into the next century. It's just going to be the reality of it. We're going to shift away from crude oil, but that's going to be a slow process, and crude oil is going to have great meaning and great value for decades to come. Even as the world moves toward green energy, there will be a lot of places that don't. And there will be also a lot of places that try to, but still, geez. I mean, if you go around, sometimes it just amazes me, flying into cities around the world, you look out and you'll see literally, as far as the eye can see, smokestacks, factories. And it's just like, how are they ever going to change all of this over? It's going to take centuries to do that. Okay. Let the icebergs melt. But okay, now let me go on here. Notice that gold and silver went in opposite directions. Really, gold is kind of a weird thing of its own. Silver is more of a traditional, silver is used for typical thing. There are sometimes speculative runs with silver, but for the most part, it's more of a supply and demand dynamics of those companies and industries that use silver. Now, let me come over here. Now, as I said, you see that the bonds moved up about 5 basis points yield, which means that the prices went down. And I'll show you, the math is really actually, it used to be kind of a pain in the butt, but with calculators, the math is awesomely easy. And you can see, well, we moved the yield up, well, that made the price go down. We moved the yield down, that made the price go up. It's a mathematical thing. There's no opinion about it, as I said. And I am going to ignore the bitcoins and all that kind of stuff. I want to get over here. Now, London. The London market for the 100 big companies that make that FTSE 100 index, they were up. But you notice that that was, I'm using terminology here that I want you to begin to get used to. The more I say these things, the more you'll begin to think and use these terms yourself. As you can see, the FTSE was choppy today. And now I'll move on. Did you hear that word choppy? That's something that you'll hear us say. That means that it was just kind of up and down and up and down, and you know, the wheels on the bus go round and round, and it ended up only about a third of a point higher than what it was when it started. That's kind of one of those, it's just one of those choppy days. The Nikkei fell off a cliff. Do you see that cliff that it fell off there? It was. It had a bear run. See how it started up. The day started up. And then it had a sell-off. That's a sell-off. In other words, the bears got something in their paw that bugged them, and they went and they took over for a while. Bulls sold out and got to the sidelines. And then it just floated, and then, boom, off a cliff that thing went. It just dropped. That is some piece of news. That's one piece of news, and it swept through. The bulls turned into beef stew, and the bears had their fun. And look at this. Then from there, it just kind of floats along to the end. In a real sense, we who know this, and that includes you now, we are looking at the physical dynamic of information happening. When we see this, we know that information happened. In other words, information is a physical force of nature. You don't think it is? You lose a couple $1 million in one day because of an information fart, and you'll know for a fact that information is a physical thing. It is a driving force of the universe. As a matter of fact, it may be even more fundamental than we had thought, according to some of the new quantum mechanics models that are coming out. Anyway, enough of that. Now, on to the to show you a screen again. Ma'am, are you looking at any particular equities today as favorable for investment? You're looking at me like, say what? I know, right? You know, you don't usually think about that unless you're a real weirdo like I am. Well, I'm looking at a couple to, most people don't. But if you're into that kind of thing, I just ask, and that's not meant to, you know, downgrade you. I was actually expecting you to look at me like, what the hell are you talking about, boy? But, Are you looking at anything today?
Maybe like AMC.
AMC, if I recall right, AMC took a turd bath today, but I might be wrong about that. AMC, American. Oh, no, it actually did a good day. I was thinking of Sava. Sava just took a creaming today, like 25% down, Sava did. AMC, up. Notice how the investors were really bullish on this today. Do you see that? Look at that, up 1.5%. That is impressive. That is not just a bull, that is a moo. That's right. That's a technical term. Write that in your notes. Moo. Okay. Do you notice, though, that this is highly volatile? I mean, up and down. I mean, this was, if you had that, if that stock had horns on it, you'd swear you were in a rodeo, the way that thing was moving back and forth. And let me tell you, this is one of those things where if you have a heart condition, just buy and then turn off your computer, because otherwise you're going to be going between poverty and success all through every day with this. But let's just look at this for a while here, and let's talk about it. And these are questions that I could ask you on a quiz or an exam. Not on this one too so much, but overall. Ma'am, when this stock opened this morning, was it up from where it closed last night? Yes, it was. It closed last night at 44.26 and opened this morning at 44.90. So there was overnight and pre-market this morning buy pressure that was greater than the sell pressure on the stock. The next thing we would probably want to do, just as a quick dirty, sir, is this a safe or a risky investment? Is this an aggressive or defensive equity?
It is an aggressive.
Yes, it is. How do you know that?
A
1.00. Yes. That's 100%, actually. 1.00. Yeah, so in other words, one is the fulcrum. That is the volatility of the world portfolio. So at 1.31, that means that if AMC is in a well-diversified portfolio, its overall volatility on average will be 131% of the world's portfolio volatility. So yeah, this one is an aggressive. You would put this in a portfolio if, one, you were an aggressive investor, or two, you just wanted to lose all your money. Now remember, the aggressive means that you can make a lot of money on something like this. But it can also mean that you are so poor, you are P-O-P-O, because you can't afford the last two letters of poor. Did you follow that? The heck with you. You did not. You're just trying to humor me. Okay, now, is this company losing money or earning money, sir?
Neither. They haven't put out any, well, they're not earning any money because they're just transferring equity.
Well, actually, they're losing money. They're bleeding so bad that, I mean, I wouldn't even take them to the blood bank to get a pint because there's probably maybe a couple of cups left in them. Earnings per share is negative $9.68. EPS is earnings per share. So if you multiply that by the number of shares outstanding, you have got a company that has lost so much money that in technical terms, the investors, the equity investors, are taking an ass bath on this company. This is a killer. Okay. Yeah, go ahead. Well, that's what I'm going to talk about next. Will you let me get to it? Okay, on this one. Well, no, you, sir. Yeah.
What do I think?
No, I don't want to know what you think. I mean, I don't trust you. You don't even order the good cheeseburgers at Red Robin's. You buy those cheapo things over at Smashburger. Okay, listen, is this, was volume above average or below average? It was above, and that's actually a little unusual these days. You see that on balance volume today was 198 million shares. Typically, on average over the last year, the OBV, the on balance volume, has been 171. So it was a day where there was an activity. That's probably, I'm actually not too impressed with that. With 20 million shares above the average, that's probably just a bunch of Wall Street bettors running in there and grabbing some because they heard another Wall Street bets fart. Let's try this. You're looking at me like, leave me alone. let me try. Sir, if I wanted to buy 100 shares, I want to go long one round lot. In other words, I want to buy. Go long means buy. If I wanted to buy 100 shares of this stock, How much would I pay without any counting commissions? Be specific with me. Nope, I would pay $4,542. That's the bid. That's what you're going to pay to buy it. The bid is $4,542. That's the price that you'll buy it at. Now, if I wanted to sell it, I would get $4,537 before I paid commissions, if there were a commission. The bid is what I can sell it at. The ask is what I can buy it at. So if right now, with a size of 1,000 by 800, I would probably, I want to go long 100 shares, one round lot, at market. In other words, when you buy, you can say, buy it for whatever it is, or you could set a limit and say, try to find it. But if I buy it at market, I'm going to pay, right now, $45.42 a share. Go long means buy. Sell means sell. Don't say short. Short is something else, and you don't want to do that until you know what short means. But if I'm buying, I'm going long. If I want my broker to buy it at the market, then I just say buy at the market. But if I want to say, here's the danger. At market, what happens if you say buy and that price pops to $47 a share? So you're probably going to want to put a limit on that. Go long one round lot, that'd be 100 shares, one round lot, at $45.50 or better. In other words, that would prevent the broker from buying it if it went too high on you. As a matter of fact, what I usually do is I give a limit order a little below $45.42. Why do I do that? Because I might catch a market maker who just wants to dump some real quick. So I might even say, go long one round lot of AMC at $45.40 or better. That means do not buy it unless you can buy it for me at $45.40 or lower. Similarly, I could sell, if I had some AMC, I could sell it. And I could say, I want to sell 100 shares of AMC at market. That would mean that you would probably get somewhere around $45.37, but that might be very stupid to do. What happens if the floor falls out from under it before the ticket is executed? So it might end up being 45. He might say, oops, my bad. It fell to $40 a share, but you said at market, so I just sold it for what the market. And you'd say, you'd start calling him all kinds of names that started with mother. And he'd say, hey, you said market. The floor fell out before I could execute the trade, before the trade could execute. So in that case, what I would probably do is I'd say sell at 45.35 or better. In other words, I would want, if it goes below 45.35, I don't want you to sell it. If you can get 45.37, great. If you can get 45.40, great. As a matter of fact, when I sell, oftentimes I will set a limit. These are, by the way, I'm teaching you limit orders, and we're just going to keep doing this until you know it. I don't expect you to be on it exactly right off the bat. But I probably, when I sell, I usually tip it a little bit. I would say, I want you to sell 100 shares of AMC at $45.40 or better. In other words, don't you dare sell that unless you can get me $45.40 or higher than that. You see what I'm doing here? I'm just playing the market a little bit. I always feel good if I can make or save $5. I feel like I've done something cool. Go. Honestly, when we're looking at Yahoo, don't trust any of the numbers to be currently what's happening. They can be, one of them can be like 10 minutes delayed, the other one can be 5 seconds delayed. That up there at the top is generally, and you gotta be careful, I gotta be careful about saying this, that's generally a settle price that happened when this ticker was picked up by Yahoo. It doesn't really mean much of anything. And quite honestly though, and I will show you an actual trading platform and we'll see real time, that 45.37 and that 45.42, there's no way they have stayed there where they are as long as they have. Is the market, yeah, the market's still trading. There's no way those have stayed at 45.37 and 45.42. Those have got to be moving all over the place, and yet they're frozen there. So the short answer to your question is those numbers are lies. I mean, once you see, it's crazy, though. When I show you a real trading platform, these numbers are just flipping so fast that it's just like your eyes are like that on the at the floor level. Okay, now, one last thing before I get off this. You see, oh, by the way, one other thing. Did I mention dark markets to you? Okay. Let me explain. Long time ago, ancient times, when I was young and foolishly an actual trader, and I owned a brokerage house, a penny stock house, we had a physical book. Every broker, dealer, all that had a physical book of transactions. You would write down, okay, this order for 100 shares at this price, at this time, one after the other. This was your open limit order book. It was a physical book. Now, of course, geeks like me were using computers back long before most people knew about them, but the floors were using computers too. And we had electronics before the internet. There was an internet called something, a real internet even back then. But we had this physical book. And then at the end of every day, you add up all of the orders and you reported them. And then those were all added up from all the broker dealers. And then that was what got you your volumes for all the different stocks. And that's still the way it is to this day, except it's an electronic and it's much more efficient. It's insane when I think about how much time was spent filling in those open order, those limit order books that every day, all the time. But anyway, so that still exists to this day, but something new is in it. It was there in my time, but it wasn't like it is now. They're what are called dark markets. Now, when you hear the dark web, you might think of a place where you buy weed or hire an assassin or maybe download some pictures of individuals who are still, I won't go into that, but shut up. I'm supposed to be very sensitive these days and not make people uncomfortable. Well, gee, I really have a hard time with that. But anyway, listen. The dark web is really just any kind of website that is not indexed. So the dark web can have very evil stuff on it, and that's when you get into the deep web. Or you can just be up there at the level of the dark web where there are not indexing. In other words, Google would never see this site. Okay, now, a lot of stock trades happen in the dark markets. There are sites where you can buy and sell stocks, lots of different stocks, many, and they are not on the books. So you'll hear me keep saying on balance volume, OBV. That means that it's on an open limit order book. It's available on the internet that we all know and love with all of the lolcats and the talentless singers on TikTok. But then there's another level where there are trades that happen that are not listed. That does not mean necessarily that they're illegal. Many of them are quite legal, but they're just not listed. Now, sir, why would a trade not be listed? Why would you not want a stock trade listed. You got any ideas? Huh? Well, on your record, you know, like a criminal record, yeah. I don't know. You got one?
Maybe tax return purposes.
Say it.
Tax return purposes.
That's getting into illegal. You know, you're playing there. And you look like the kind of guy who would be an unlawful type. Got a Texas with a Nike swoosh. There's two things, two strikes. No, seriously. Man, okay, let me give you a couple of examples. Suppose that I am a large-scale investor. Whenever I make a trade, every stupid hoe handle on the planet tries to follow me. I just want to unload 100 million shares because I'm going through a divorce and I want to buy off the private detective that she hired or he hired. Or I just want to reposition myself, not because I have some sentiment against the company, but because I just want to get my portfolio a little more balanced. And I'll do that in a quiet place, not in a place where every idiot can say, "What did he do that for?" Okay, that's one of the big things. Another one is just the privacy. I was in... some years, it's been like three, four, probably even more than that. I took my club students up to Chicago to one of the biggest houses. You would recognize the name. And I had a couple of former students who are now high up in there, or they were at the time. And so they arranged for us to meet the portfolio managers. And I mean, these cats, we were on the 55th floor of this skyscraper, and I got bored after a while. That's why you'll see some awesome photographs I took from on top where I wasn't supposed to be while they were all down there schmoozing. But I was there when the portfolio managers were talking, and they came in, all very well seasoned, young. Not one of them was ugly. Every one of those people was good looking. And at that time, of course, it was, you know, the typical all white male, which was, it has changed somewhat, but it needs to change more. But they're talking, and they're saying, well, we manage portfolios of families and trusts and institutions. And then one of them said, we don't really have any interest in any client who has less than, and he looked over at his fellow trader, portfolio manager, and he said, what is it? We're like $50 million now. We don't, yeah, about $50 million. If you got less than $50 million, we send you downstairs to our regular people. Regular? What do you mean? Yeah, if I had $49 million, I'm a regular person. No, I'm not. But anyway, the point was there that these people take care of these families. It's not just, well, we buy and sell stocks. They manage those people's lives. They set up portfolios that have positions that hit certain goals at specific times. They do things like they make arrangements for medical care, for the money for weddings, for the money for travel and expenses. They are all purpose managers. They don't want to do trades that the common person might catch wind of. They want to do all this because their clients don't want everyone in the world to know what they're doing. The conservatorship for Britney Spears, do you know how many stock shares they bought and sold last year? You don't. That's right, you don't. Do you know how many shares of other companies Disney holds right now? You don't. They own a lot, but that you don't know. See, that's the thing is, these dark markets protect privacy from the prying eyes of us little people, us low lives. I felt really kind of minor. I was sitting there listening to this, and you know, I was looking in my pocket, making sure that I had enough to buy some Qdoba at that place in the financial district. And there they are talking about, you know, $50 million is the least that you better come to them with, or they're not going to be really interested in you. Okay, enough of that. Financial institutions. First of all, we have to talk about this idea of financial intermediation. Madam, do you have $20 I can borrow?
No.
Well, you know, you're supposed to say no, you perv. Get away from me. No, here's the thing, though, is, you see, in this case, I am a deficit economic unit because I need money. You said, yes, you have it, so you would be a surplus economic unit. Well, that means that we might be a match. I need 20, you've got 20. But probably not. Because you see, well, there are three things that would drive that. One is, I might need money, but it's not what you have to available. I might need 20 and you have 10. Or I might need 20, but you want to lend 100. You don't want to do little. So in other words, in financial intermediation, matching of surplus and deficit economic units, the first thing is the level, the amount. Level. Now, the next thing is, we meet $20. So the level was met. And I want to pay you back next week. And you say, no, fat boy, I don't want it back until next year because I want to soak you for a lot of interest. I say, you running capitalist dog, you. I like that, but I want to pay it back. So in this case, the timing would not be the same. You see, there are a lot of life insurance companies that have insanely huge amounts of money to lend, but they wouldn't lend it to someone who wants to borrow for a couple of years because they probably want to have that money out there for an average expected life of one of their insureds. So, in other words, the next one would be timing. So there's level and timing, and then there's finally one more. Everything else works, but then you realize that you're talking to Professor C, who is an unreliable, rathscallion, dog-beating, undesirable, who actually does put the milk in before the cereal. And that's just it, right there. You're done. You say I need to be executed, and I agree with you. I actually got into art. You know why? Because my mother said someday I'd hang. You got that, didn't you? Okay, I just want to make sure. I'll leave you alone now. You're beginning to look a little bit concerned here. Now, so in other words, financial intermediation is the matching of surplus and deficit economic units. The matching of surplus and deficit economic units, taking into account level, timing, and risk. Financial intermediation is the matching of surplus and deficit economic units, taking into account level, timing, and risk. Financial intermediation is the matching of surplus and deficit economic units, taking into account level, timing, and risk. You follow? Okay. Now, notice something interesting here. You can be a surplus and a deficit economic unit at the same time. You, sir, are going to make lots of money. You're going to be a very wealthy person. But you still might not have enough to buy a home with cash. So overall, you might be a surplus economic unit. You lend money through your financial institution and all that to others, but you also have to borrow money for a home. So you can be both sides of it at the same time in your life. You, madam, are very, very rich. I actually know this. You're living an incognito life. You are actually the youngest of a family of arms merchants who worked out of Bulgaria, but then after the Cold War, they moved their operation to London, and from there, MI6 got involved with them, and then they decided that they had to go to Toledo and live in a trailer park because that was the only way they could avoid the assassins who came from Minsk to neutralize them. Moving along... The heck is he doing? No, moving along here, though, but the point, though, is that you're very wealthy, but at the same time, you might not have money for a burger, and you might have to borrow the money from me. You might actually not have a lot of wealth, but you got enough money that you can hook up a friend with $10 for a while. You're saying, yeah, right, I'll do it now. But you see, there's the interesting part is that you can play both sides of it. So when I talk about financial institutions, understand that financial intermediation is always on the table. Matching surplus and deficit economic units, according to level, timing, and risk. Now, within that context, there are different specializations. Like, for example, your typical retail bank. That is just a place where average everyday Joes and Janes deposit their money, and then that you are a surplus economic unit, and they intermediate because they're going to do things with that money, like lend it to other people for cars and homes and things like that, small business loans. And then there are the big heavies, the commercial banks. Now, those would actually be banks, sometimes even banks for banks, or banks for monstrous companies. So that's commercial. Now, there are these multi-level, and I don't know if the book really goes into it. Well, maybe it does, but they kind of get the terminology a little fuzzy. There are these banks that are all kinds of different things at the same time. They can be like, they can have a type of bank that is for regular consumers, but then they have another type of bank that is for ginormous corporations. Then they might have another type of bank that is a bank for other financial institutions. And then they have a bank that is merely a bank that serves as an asset manager for the United States government. I mean, it's just like these, they're like conglomerate, or I don't know what you would call them, Godzilla banks or whatever it is. Like Chase is one of those. You'll see Chase, but if you look carefully, the spelling will be different of bank, or the name might be a little bit different. And sometimes they don't even have the same name. They'll use a DBA to hide the larger bank. So you've got those kinds of that thing too big to fail. That's what I'm talking about, is those monsters. They are just an absolute basket case, but they can't fail because the government couldn't afford to have them fail. So they just kind of live like zombies out there. But that's not the only kind of financial institutions that are around. The next one that I would mention is the investment bank, and I've already mentioned those before. Investment banks aren't banks like you think of them. If a company wants to go public, the best way is to get a firm underwriting. In other words, an investment bank says, we'll buy this stock from you, and then we'll sell it. They're not selling it on behalf of the company. They're selling it on their own ticket. Literally, they have bought the primary offering, and now they transact it in the secondary market. Now, an investment bank wouldn't do it on its own. Probably it would work. Oh, well, not probably. It would do a syndicate. So in other words, you, madam, have decided to go public with Megacorp International, which you founded, and now you are essentially the controller of the universe, and you want to go public with it so that you can build hotels on Mars. Oh, okay. That would probably, let's say that I am the lead underwriter. You come to me and you say, well, I want to sell 100 million shares at $100 a share. Now, we would try and work out the price, the actual price, but to raise $10 billion. I'd say, okie dokie. And then I would go to other investment banks and I'd say, do you want to be a part of the syndicate? In other words, okay, you'll take, of that 100 million shares, you'll take 10 million, you'll take 30 million, you'll take 5 million. In other words, it's not just one bank holding, taking care of the whole thing. It's a syndicate that does it. As a matter of fact, if I'll show you a tombstone, in other words, the document that says who's who in the zoo on these, and you'll see the syndicates can be like 20 different, 30 different investment banks all having a little piece of the action. But in the end, you get a check for your, you get a check. That's all. You don't have to worry about it. You've got, of course, you're going to pay fees to us. We're going to make money out the butt on this. Charging you fees, getting involved in consulting for you, essentially becoming your lifelong buddies forever for the purpose of you getting the money from us. But, of course, you're not going to argue with that. You're getting $10 billion. That's an investment bank. They deal only in this. Now, there are other kinds of banks, too. Now, there are these ones like credit unions. They are more or less banks, but they have limited membership and they have tax advantages. There are other kinds of small banks, too. Community banks. There was one, it's sort of like a credit union, but it's not. It was very old. The interesting thing is that even during the bank disaster of 1929 and after that, this type of bank called a mutual bank, I don't think there was one of them that failed. A mutual bank is essentially, if you want to deposit your money there, you go through a scrutinization because if they take you as a depositor, you become one of the owners of the bank. Literally, you are an owner. And so mutual banks, I mean, everyone who came in there was an owner, so everyone who worked there was talking to their employers every day. And these were actually highly successful, but they're not around so much. But like I said, credit unions are sort of kind of like that. Okay. Now, among other financial institutions, financial intermediaries, if as it were, I'm trying to find a marker. I got in so much trouble because it was not a good marker last time. Okay. I'll stick with this one. There are these things like mutual funds. A mutual fund, if they let you invest in it. Now, there are mutual funds that you have to pay. Those are called load funds. Then there are ones where you can join for free. But once you join, you kind of are like an owner of the fund. You get a fractional piece of the company. Now, as time goes on, your portfolio grows. You can become more of an owner, sort of, because if dividends come in, they can reinvest them, and that means that your investment goes up. Mutual funds are kind of cool because you can choose mutual funds. There are hundreds of thousands by companies like Vanguard, TIA, PIMCO, you name it. Everyone's got mutual funds. You can choose a fund that is very broad-based, a fund that's bonds, a fund that's stocks, a fund that's mixed. You can choose a fund that's medical stuff. You can choose a fund that's green energy. You can choose a fund that's international. I mean, there anything that you would possibly want, there's a mutual fund for it. And the managers, they make money if they make money for you. And some are good, some are bad. And you just have to choose one that fits your desires and your risk level. Similarly, and I'll get into this more again next week because now we're getting into some serious stuff here. Electronically traded funds, ETFs. Sometimes you'll hear one that's called an ETN. These are sort of like mutual funds, except that they're like a company. As a matter of fact, mutual funds sometimes own ETFs. essentially, it's a company that is nothing but a portfolio of stocks. That's all it is. Like, you could buy a fund called the SPDR. That is the Standard & Poor's 500. Now, if you wanted to buy a perfectly balanced S&P 500 portfolio, in other words, each stock in the portfolio, there were 500 stocks, each one was in its weight in the portfolio, was the same of its market value in the portfolio of the companies themselves. Oh my God, that would cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars. Or you can buy a SPDR, and that's a share of what is nothing but the S&P 500. So you become, your portfolio is the S&P 500. Now, I ask you, if you wanted to go to if you wanted to go to a finance singles bar, don't you think it would sound very cool if you said, why, yes, I own the Standard & Poor's 500? No. I think it would. You would go home with a friend. Let's get that quiz done. It'll be open at 3 o'clock on the button. It's in VeggieNet, and you won't see it until 3 o'clock, and then open it up. And like I said, you have 10 minutes. If there's an accommodation, the time is 15 minutes. Once you're finished with that, you're done for the day, and that's all I have for you. I thank you.